Hi there, it's Nikki. I wanted to take a quick minute to make sure you knew about our free on-demand copywriting training. Whether you're brand new to copywriting or you just can't seem to hit your income goals, this training is for you. You'll learn the three secrets to landing freelance copywriting work without wasting time on frustrating job bidding sites like Upwork and Fiverr or cold calling strangers. And if you've listened to any of the student stories on this podcast, this is the exact same training they all got started with. I'm talking about KK, who's making six figures working part-time and who just retired her husband to help her run the business. Stuart, who replaced his full-time salary with freelance copywriting work and then some. Stacy, who hit six figures in 6 months, her very first year as a full-time freelancer. Ashley, who landed the in-house copywriting job of her dreams. They all started with this free training, and you can get started with that same training too. Sign up right now at freecopywritingtraining.com. Are you ready to learn the keys to copywriting success? My name is Nikki Krawczyk, and I've been a copywriter for more than 20 years, writing for multi-billion dollar companies down to solopreneurs and every size business in between. My co-host Kate Sitars and I, along with the rest of the Filthy Rich Writer team, are sharing everything we've learned in our decades in the industry so that you can start and scale a successful copywriting business of your own. To us, being filthy rich means having a job you love, being good at what you do, and making great money doing it. Let's dig in. Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Build Your Copywriting Business podcast. Hello, friends.
Hello.
As always, I am joined by my super spectacular co-host, Kate Sitars. Hello, Kate.
Hello.
And today, Kate and I have the pleasure of being joined by Jessica Lackey, who is a business builder, business strategist. And actually, I shouldn't even try to say this myself. I have a bio for you. So let me read some of that bio. Jessica is a strategy and operations advisor who bridges the gap between traditional business practices and a thirst for creating sustainable businesses with a human-centric approach. I love that. Heart-centered, human-centered. It's not, I think our listeners will really appreciate that. We talk a lot about, yes, making sales is important, but being sales-focused is not necessarily the way to hit your goals, especially if your goals also are freedom-oriented, fulfillment-oriented, all of that kind of thing. So I'm really excited to hear about what you can share with our audience about growing their businesses, getting to that next level, getting rid of some of the mindset stuff that gets in the way of getting to that next level. So probably I should stop talking because you have all the information. Jessica, welcome.
Super excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
We are super excited to have you. Now, before we get into the tactics and all that kind of stuff, can you give us just an idea of how you got to where you are in your business today? What called you to be doing the work that you're doing?
So I have a traditional business background where I went to school. I worked at a top tier consulting firm. I got my MBA at Harvard Business School. And I don't love to like play that out, but
you should.
Maybe. But people, for anyone who's like, oh my God, I didn't go to business school. They don't teach you anything. You know how to run a small business in business school. Let's just like put that on the table. And then I worked for Nike for about 7 years before I realized that, that corporate environment was helping me put profits before people. And I was burned out. And I was like, I don't want to continue taking my gifts and talents and making this multi-billion dollar company more money. How can I bring these traditional business principles that are, done reasonably and not extractively, good for small business? And how can I work with a population that, you know, isn't going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a business degree. So that's how I got from big business to small business. And I couldn't be happier with the transition because this is where you change people's lives, not just the lives of my clients, but the lives of their clients. And this is where you create the real ripple effect.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree.
I agree. And I think too, for our audience, it's changing their own lives, but also remembering that as we work with our copywriting clients, when we give them great copy, when we give them a better sales page, when we give them a better whatever, we are helping our clients improve their lives. And then our clients are often helping their clients improve their lives. So it is exactly that, a really fantastic ripple effect. So we're excited to have you here to talk about doing this all more effectively and on a bigger scale. So when people are, especially freelancers, are thinking about scaling their businesses, what are some of the mistakes that you see people make, or the assumptions or mistaken assumptions, I think is probably the better way, that get in their way?
I think the biggest the misconception and the problem that happens is when we jump too far beyond the stage of business that we're in. Mm-hmm. So I have what I call the five stages of business. It's a business life cycle assessment, but it's based on growing trees. So we have the seed business, where we're figuring out what we want to do and figuring out who our client is and how we like to work. And do we like to work in day-long blocks? Do we like to work in 3-month projects? Like with copy, it's all, how does your energy work and where does your creative muse show up, and how many clients can you take on at a time, and what kind of projects do you like to do, right? That's the seed stage. Mm-hmm. The sprout stage is where you're tending to those roots. And at that point, you're building a more effective sales and marketing system, and one actually putting in a repeatable process and things that you do on a regular basis to generate sales. You're honing on that positioning. You're really making sure that the value you create for your clients is reflected in your social proof and your testimonials and your, I don't know if your clients are like this, but I find that the cobbler's kids often have no shoes. And so that we write amazing copy for our clients, and yet when it comes to ours, we can't necessarily write the copy that's compelling enough for our business, right? Just, you know, you can't cut your own hair.
Mm-hmm. Or you leave it till last. You have not updating your website. Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Every student that comes on our podcast, it's the running joke is no one has updated their portfolio. When we right. They're like, okay, now I need to do it because I'm on the podcast. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then there's the strengthen stage, which is, all right, I'm regularly getting in business, and now it's time to make sure that my delivery systems for my clients are set so that at strong communication, I start to make sure my business financials, like I don't want to scale an unprofitable business, which actually happens more often than you think. Once you've established those stronger systems, then you're ready for scale. And I think one of the problems is we tend to see people take on methods that are meant for businesses scaling that actually take you away from the core methods that you need to tend to seeds and sprouts. And mm-hmm. so we're doing a lot of work, but it's actually work meant for a business that's not ours, or a business that's more senior than ours or more experienced than ours, because that's what we see our teachers doing. Mm-hmm. So it's how can we level set and be like, okay, I am where I am in my business, and what do I need to focus on at this stage of business? Mm-hmm.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm guessing that I think a lot of people listening or watching are in that seed stage. Someone is just getting started. Maybe they're learning. Maybe they have not yet committed to becoming a copywriter, or maybe they are in the Comprehensive Copywriting Academy and they're learning, which is everybody starts at the seed, right? There's nothing, you can't skip the seed. And then too, I think probably a lot of people listening are also, I believe it was the sprout stage was the next stage, yep. Right? So for our students who are listening, if you are starting to ramp up your pitching, Jessica, one of the things that we really focus on is pitching, but pitching in a very value-oriented way. Every pitch is, we strip out the sales and we make it about presenting ideas and presenting value first and foremost. But even though it's a gift, even though it is, you are giving value, it can sometimes be, I don't even want to say a challenge, but it can be a hurdle to get over to make those tasks consistent. And then of course too, we have students in the next stages who they've gotten that down and they are they're moving on. Certainly our listeners know we have our six-figure students and plenty of that, but I think a lot of our students are in that seed and sprout stage. What I was going to say what tips, but that's so explain to us exactly how people get out of that stage and do that in 10 minutes or less. But what are maybe some of the roadblocks that you see people in these stages that come up against that keep them from moving to the next one? Or what are some of the things that they can focus on that will help them move to that next stage?
Yeah, I think there's, and this is my bias, so you know your mileage may vary, but I think at the seed and sprout stage, there's a lot of messaging that's like hone in on one particular offer, hone in on one particular client. And I think we want to make sure we're narrow and enough in our focus so that we're not shooting a fish in a barrel all over the place, but that we need to be looking for the patterns in the types of clients that we're serving. What are their stage of business? Do we like to work with clients that are very creative, or do we like to work with clients that are actually a little more structured? Who do we jive best with? And so I think at this stage, I think it's about pattern gathering and data gathering as much as it is. Yes, revenue numbers are important. And yes, we want to make money, but I would rather at the seed and sprout stage, see you get more reps in and doing client work and getting those patterns versus being as focused on the pricing per project. Again, we never want to be unprofitable, but I think too many times I see people worrying about the right pricing and the right structure for the offer. And I'm like, just go do the work, get, 10 to 20 reps in, see what types of patterns are emerging in the type of work you're doing. And then set aside time to do the heavy lifting in our own businesses that we never want to do again, update that copy, put that portfolio together, make dedicated time to start building that infrastructure. That's really important. And I think, again, that's the work that makes you money in the long term. It's not the money work that makes you money like today. But I think we have to start doing that because otherwise it's hard to move out of that sprout stage.
That makes a lot of sense. And it's something, Kate, you're probably going to say something similar as we.
Yeah, I was going to say.
on the same page. We talk to our students a lot about, people say, oh, you have to choose your niche. But really what benefits our students most, at least within the first several years, is developing a depth and breadth of experience. And I love the way that you approach it with the idea of start to notice what you like. You may like, when I was focusing mostly on copywriting versus having this business, I liked having the depth and breadth of experience, but other copywriters may discover that they like working with a certain type of client, or they like doing a certain type of work. But I love the idea of looking for the patterns without necessarily even at this point committing to them. Just saying, all right, what is it about this? Which I think gets back to gets back to that human-centered approach of, hey, what am I enjoying here? Yeah.
Yeah. Writing, maybe you end up wanting to write for B2B. Maybe you end up wanting to write for the startups. Maybe you want to write for, more seasoned online business entrepreneurs. But all that copywriting has a different purpose to it, has a different lens. And if you say, oh, I'm going to hone in on this specific really early, you're like, well, is that really what you want to do? Or is that just, I tend to find, and you may see this in your clients, that your first clients come from who's in your network and not necessarily what you want to do long-term. It's like who is in your immediate network that you can contact. So the other thing that you probably talk about all the time is continually expanding your network. And a lot of times people default to social media, which I'm like, this is great, but also how are you making real relationships with people on the platform versus just posting and ghosting?
And I feel like this falls under the not making assumptions that we always talk about too, of like, how do you know who you like to work with until you work with them?
Exactly. Yeah. So Jessica, why do you think when we know that we want to grow our businesses and we have a good sense of what we need to do in order to grow our businesses, why do you think it is so difficult for us, or maybe challenging for us, to take those actions that we need to take? And as part of that, how can we do those actions more consistently?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to it. One is, of course, we want to be there more quickly. I did my 2024 planning and I'm on a precipice year for my business. And you know, I took like, I don't know if you have like sticky notes. I have sticky notes with all the projects I want to do and all the things I want to do on my wall, like all the things I need to do. Like I finally rewrote my website copy on for some sales pages, like over the holidays. And that had been on my wall for like a month or two or four. And so I put all of my digital stickies into an actual task planner, a Notion dashboard. And I looked at it, I said, that's 2024. It's like the whole year. And we want to be at the next stage. We all want, I'm like, who wouldn't want to say, well, I'm going to put all this and try to do it all in the week before, between January and New Year's. Mm-hmm. Because that's, we see, when you see the future, of course you want to be there as fast as possible. But future Jessica could do it all. But present Jessica's like, or you know, current Jessica's like, oh, like I can only do one of these tasks a week. And so having the accountability and having the patience to build the building block one route at a time, it's hard, because who doesn't want to go overnight from a seed to a tree with fruits, like a mature tree, even though we know nature says that you grow a ring every single year and it takes some time to build. But I think we're human. We want to be where we see the future is. We want to be there right now. That's why it's so hard.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips for how to encourage ourselves to be patient, or encourage ourselves to focus on the individual tasks and value the individual tasks instead of just valuing where we want to be?
I think it's breaking down, okay, that vision you have for your business. What is this? Again, getting really clear on the stage, because I think that's really important when you're like, oh, the checklist of things I need to do is different than the checklist of things that other business needs to do. And so how do we keep our eyes on our paper? But having a kind of a ritual around every season, I'm going to work on one root system in my business. This is the season I'm going to work on expanding my network. This is the season I'm going to really start documenting my process of how I deliver to my clients. This is the season I'm going to put some systems in place. And saying I'm going to focus on one big system in my business every season and one concrete project every month. Mm-hmm. And it may seem hard to say, well, I'm only going to do one project a month. But then at the end of, you will have done 12 big projects and focused on four big root systems in your business, and have a place that have your digital sticky notes where you can throw all the things that you want to do in there. Like, cause they're all coming back. It's just not here yet. So I have like the not yet pile and the working on pile, and it's not going away. They're there. But I think even having a ritual of like, this season I'm focused on this. This is my one project at a time, chip away at it one concrete thing at a time. Again, having communities like, you know, other copywriters to say, this is what we're focused on. We're not focused on 20 different things and making progress on none of them. We're holding ourselves accountable to one project, you know, one focus a season, one project a month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. It's almost like a theme for the quarter, a theme for the season. I think that's really fantastic. We're recording this. It's not going to come out in January, but we're recording this in January when it's the New Year's resolution, and everybody's thinking about how am I going to change my life? And I want to change my life in these five different areas. And I think I certainly have experience in this. You guys may as well, where you think I'm going to change my life in these five different areas at the same time. And it never works. The way to actually make progress is to focus on one thing. Be aware, like you said, Jessica, be aware that the other things are things that I want to work on eventually. Focus on one thing, get that thing going. And then once that thing is chugging along or getting in a place where I want it to be, then I can go back and start looking at these other areas that I want to. And I think our business is kind of a good mirror for our lives in that way.
And I always say, go upstream to the real bottleneck, and maybe also kind of consider like the capstone habit. So maybe, you know, we think about like, oh, I want more sales, I want more clients. The problem, the real challenge might not be at all like anything related to the pitch or anything related to your network. It might be that if we go upstream, it's that you're not going to bed on time, and therefore you're not getting up on time, and therefore the time that you feel most energized to do sales, you're kind of still waking up for the day. And so if we go upstream and say, well, the best thing I can do for my business is not try to push harder on the symptom, as it were. It's to address the root cause, which is really, I'm not going to bed on time, which has nothing to do with, in this case, like, you know, doing sales outreach. It's about doing your energy. So if we focus on maybe the theme for the season, you know, is sales, but really the action I need to take in the project is, what do I need to do to go to bed on time? So I have the energy to bring my best self to my work every day. And I think that's, if we focus on the one capstone habit that sets the process of cascades for everything else, it does help with that upward spiral, or cutting the thing that keeps us in the downward spiral. You know, like I have a bad habit of checking social media at night and then kind of getting lost in compare and despair at that, you know, when I'm at the end of my day and I'm like, oh, I want to go. I just mute those. I've muted those accounts. Mm-hmm. I've shut off my Instagram mm-hmm. after 8:30 because I'm like, this is not helpful for me. And it's taking me away from my goals.
Mm-hmm. I think that's such a great insight that what we think is the problem is not always the problem. Like I'm just, for example, if a copywriter is thinking, oh God, I'm not sending out pitches and I'm not sending out pitches and there's something wrong with me and pitching is too hard. But really, if they're trying to send out pitches at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, or they're leaving it, which is emotionally and energetically low time for them, or they're leaving it until after they've done all the client work and they're tired. The problem isn't so much that pitching is hard, because our students know it's not actually hard. It's just sending an email. It's trying to do it at a time when you are not. You are not set up. You are biologically not set up to do that creative work. I think that's such an interesting insight as we think about, what do I want to be doing? Why am I not doing it? It's not necessarily because we're bad people or we're not set to, we'll never be successful or we'll never be as good as so-and-so that we see on social media. It may be, the problem may be something very different from what we think it is. And it's very valuable to take the time to think about, okay, what are the different inputs that are getting me this output? Yeah, so interesting.
Curious, we talk sometimes about, you know, doing a time audit of like monitoring your time for a couple of weeks and seeing what you're actually doing and where your time's actually going and where your energy is best. But do you have any other tips for how do you get that kind of pull back and look at that high level view to say, okay, maybe it's not the pitching. It is my not going to bed at time. What can we do to kind of get there and kind of mm-hmm. realize that what we think is the problem might not be the problem?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I do love a good time audit. I mean, I wouldn't be an operations systems person if I didn't. But there's also a tool from operations we can use called the 5 Whys. So mm-hmm. we ask the question at the top, you know, and I think you talked about this in another podcast about using data. Okay. Mm-hmm. Why are my pitches not converting? We ask the question, why? Well, I'm sending them at a day, a time that I don't feel great about. Why is that? Well, because I'm doing all my client work first. Well, why is that? Well, I have too much client work to mm-hmm. do, and my client work is always outstripping the time I give to it. Why is that? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, because I don't have great onboarding structures for my clients, and therefore we end up with lots of rounds of revisions. So in this case, for the same answer, it's not going to bed on time. It's asking, going 5 levels why, to say, well, actually, what I need to do is restructure my onboarding and first month copy process so that we set the brand voice more accurately in advance, so there's less revisions. Like using that 5 Whys concept can help you go below what seems to be the solution, which would be send out more sales pitches or update the sales pitch, to the real problem, which is, could be for this person, I'm spending too much time on revisions because my process isn't structured enough for upfront work. Mm-hmm. And it helps us get through the emotional charge of those first couple of questions, like, oh, the problem is me. The problem is almost never you. It's almost never you. I mean, you know, but it's usually something related to the environment that we're operating in and the patterns that we're running for ourselves. So how can we break some of those patterns, but break the right patterns versus just hammering away at the one that seems like the problem on the surface?
Mm-hmm. You brought up the emotions, and I think that's such an important thing to underline, because yes, the first I don't feel like, or I feel this, or, and I don't mean to take with that tone of voice, but internally that can be how it feels. I feel this. But as you ask those questions and as you focus on the objective truth, the fact of, you may start out by feeling this. Okay. Why do I feel this? Okay. But focusing on truly provable facts, you get to the real answers and you can set aside, because emotions cloud us. They cloud everything that we do, and they're certainly valuable and they're important and we should all continue to keep feeling emotions. But when we are stuck in an emotional headspace, it can be so hard to make changes or to make effective changes. And I love that your process lets us start out in that emotional headspace, if that's where we are. Maybe you don't start in that emotional headspace, but if you do, I love that your process lets us start there and honor being there, but lets us dig deeper into the facts of how we get there. I love that.
Yeah, and I wouldn't suggest doing this when you're in a highly charged emotional state. Like, this can be helpful, but what I recommend is also pairing that with breathing exercises, body exercises. Before you do this exercise, go for a grounding walk, have water, drink something and eat something. Because could it be that, oh, my pitches aren't working, or it could be that I'm hungry and I didn't have time to go to the bathroom today. So I think, really being in touch to say, I'm going to bring both kind of like the somatic intuition that my body has, and I'm also going to bring this more, tool-based mental assessment. How do I bring both those together? Because a lot of times when you're asking these questions and you're going through, you also feel different places light up in your body. And so how can we make sure that we're in a regulated enough space to notice what comes up when you get to a question? You're like, oh, that hits. This is a truth that I've maybe been ignoring. And this is that like lingering project. And this is a related to kind of a, like, I've hit that limiting belief. And so it could be, based on a project, but it could be something where you hit a core wound. And so how can you honor that and like leave space for that? Mm-hmm.
In your experience, how do your clients often identify how does that feel physically? And if someone is not used to tuning into their bodies and to those reactions, what might be some clues that's something that they've hit?
It's really, thinking about like the chakra system. So like the most common ones I see are throat, chest, stomach, and then like solar plexus area. Noticing, does it get tight? Does it get hot? Does it get that clench feeling? Does it feel like there's like the lead pit in the stomach? So using body noticing practices and doing that in addition to mm-hmm. like having a practice to be like, what is my body feeling like today? How can I do a quick body scan and notice what I'm feeling, getting in tune with that. And then also having these more mental practices to say, oh, I now, even if you don't know what it is, you should be like, oh, I feel something. I don't know what it is. I don't need to worry about that yet. I'm just going to notice that it's there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm curious with, talking about, I think it's beating ourselves up. I think of like the problem's generally not us, the environment. I love that. But I think we beat ourselves up for a lot of things. But thinking about especially resolutions this time of year that we give up by February on them, or we just feel like, oh, I'm not achieving it. I'm not hitting my goal. Do you have advice or tips or tactics to not beat ourselves up, but when we're just, we feel like we're not achieving the thing that we set out to achieve, is it that we made it too big, or what can we do when we feel like we're not, getting those wins that we need to sustain that motivation to keep going?
Yeah. So there's a professional poker player named Annie Duke that she talks about this term called resulting. In poker, the resulting is, oh, I lost a hand, or I lost at the table. You're looking at the outcome as the metric versus looking at the level of play and saying, did I play based on the rules I have been taught and the rules I know? And like, did I do the things I said I was going to do? If I did the things I said I was going to do and it was a bad play, bad hand, okay, well, what can I learn from that? Is that something that's likely to be repeatable? If I didn't play, like with what I've been taught, I got caught up in the moment and then how can we evaluate the quality of our decision versus the quality of our outcome? And I think that's very similar to resolutions. How can we, I don't care about your goals. I really care about your plan. And I want to say, did we do the plan? And if we did the plan and we didn't get the results was that a macro trends challenge, or is that a something I can learn from my plan? And if I didn't do my plan, to your point, Kate, how can I, what was the gap? And a lot of times it could be a safety gap. I don't feel safe to do this. It could be a capability gap or a skill gap. I actually don't know how to do this. It could be a desire gap. I don't want to do this. It could, you know, so like we kind of get curious about the gap. You know, a lot of times starting a newsletter is actually really challenging for a lot of people because it's not one project. It's like 20 projects, and not to overwhelm people, but there's the inviting your audience. There's the designing the template. There's design, setting up with your service provider. It's writing the first one. And we have to almost break it down into that level and say, like, which of these are going to get you stuck? And how do you call in an expert? Do you co-working with a friend? But, you know, then you're at the end of the year, you're like, well, I didn't grow my newsletter. And then we say, well, when did you start said newsletter? And when did you want to start said newsletter? So how can we break it down to the component parts to say, this is hard. Where do you, how can we close the gap here? And is it a, you know, desire gap, capacity gap, skill gap, safety gap?
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Yeah. Where would you say that confidence falls within those gaps?
Mm.
Is that a, is that, is it its own gap, or do you find that it's within one of those?
It's usually with one of those. And I think it's like, why am I not confident? And it could be because I don't feel safe to do this. And why is that? Or it could be, I'm not confident in it because I actually haven't written in a long time and I don't know how to write, or I'm not. So I think that would be, I think the confidence gap can be masking one of these other gaps. Like, I'm not confident I can do this. Well, because I have 40 other tasks that I'm trying to do right now. So I'm not confident I can do it. And so I think that we can go the one level deeper, try the five whys and say, why am I not confident? And ask the question of, I'm not confident in it because I don't want to, or because it's a shiny should, or because I've never done it before. So how can I get some support, get some best practices, get a swipe file to learn from, type of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. Yeah. And so I think maybe the next thing to dig into is, as you mentioned, there are goals, but there are also plans, and the plans is truly how you get to those goals. So how can people go about, which I realize this is a big topic, but how can people go about setting up plans that are likely to get them to their goals versus plans that are going to send them in who knows how different, in many different areas, or plans that just won't get executed?
Yeah, I think we go back to kind of that root system structure we talked about at the beginning. So the goal we set, I want this much money, I want this many clients. Then we set the actions. Okay, in order to have this kind of revenue, these are the actions I need to be taking. These are the pitches I need to send out every week. This is the, these are the number of conversations I need to have. This is the number of assets that need to get updated on my own website. And then we look at the projects that set up the systems to make that happen. What do I need to do in order to send out those sales pitches? Do I need to have a template? Do I need to set aside dedicated sales time? We look at, you know, in order, kind of going back to that five whys concept, okay, well, maybe I need, in order to free up my time from client work, I have to put that together, that onboarding process. And again, we pick the actions we need to take and the projects that make taking those actions easier, and then take one project at a time. We pick, you know, again, like we focus on what I would consider the bottleneck. What's the thing that's the most limiting factor to those actions, to that goal? Focus on that first, one systematic project at a time. Because as James Clear says, we don't rise to the level of our goals, we fall to the level of our systems. So how can we spend some time every month putting the infrastructure in place to make pitching easier, to make, you know, working on our business easier, to make client delivery easier, so we have time to do more sales pitches? So it's really determining the actions we need to take. And you know, if you're teaching pitching, you know, you've got conversion metrics, and so you want to be looking at those. But then it's, okay, one project at a time, one root system at a time. What are the projects I'm going to implement to make those actions easier or convert better, as they were, sales metrics wise?
Absolutely. And just because I'm anticipating this question, I personally am about as creative and artistic and hard to pin down as anybody, but I also love a system to follow. For those people who are listening and thinking, what systems? I want to freelance. I want my life to be free and loose. And what do you say to people who think that systems mean limitations?
I want to clarify that systems does not mean tech. Systems means the holistic purpose, people, process, tool that we put in place. Systems give you freedom. Because if you're running, or if you're like, well, I don't want systems, I don't want to like put stuff in there, then you never really know what's coming up. You end up working late. You end up in the feast and famine cycle. Like having a system for like logging your clients, logging your follow-up, planning for that means that you're never spending time wondering, where's my next client coming from? When's the last time I talked to this person? Where are they in a sales process? So a little bit of systems, a little bit of structure, like this is not like Uber structure, but a little bit of structure puts your mind at ease and puts your nervous system at ease to say, I haven't forgotten anything because it's somewhere. The projects I want to do are somewhere. The people I need to connect with are somewhere. Like my finances are careful. Like that mental load and the emotional burden of feeling free on the surface, but then in your mind, it's like, oh my God, I don't know what's coming. My calendar's a mess. Like that's not freedom, even though it might look like it from how you're spending time. But that's really not, that's not real freedom. That's being trapped in a sea of chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And no one wants to be trapped in a sea of chaos. Yes. Terrific. So good. Jessica, this has been so interesting. So fantastic. A ton of takeaways. If someone is listening and they're like, I want to learn more. What resources do you have?
Give me a plan.
Exactly. I want to sit down with Jessica. Where can people find you, follow you, all that stuff?
They can find me at jessicalackey.com/welcome. That page has a list of blog posts and resources, my newsletter, but also the quiz to determine your stage of business and what to focus on. And you can find me, I have quite quit Instagram because it's not super great for my mental health. But you can find me there. You can find me there for stories. I'm on Threads and I'm on LinkedIn as well.
That's terrific.
And we will all of that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Well, Jessica, thank you so, so much. And I know really we have just kind of this really tip the of the iceberg.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we might have to have you back on to dig in even deeper. But this was fantastic. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you. And so with that, we will catch you all in the next episode. Bye, everybody.
Like what you heard? Subscribe to the Build Your Copywriting Business podcast so you never miss any copywriting tips, tools, or tactics. And if you think copywriting might be right for you, check out our free on-demand video training at freecopywritingtraining.com. We'll catch you in the next episode.